Hey, welcome back to Auto Transport Intel. Thanks for joining me today. It is Wednesday. It is noon Central Time. That means it's time for DOT compliance with your DOT guy, Brian Riker. So we're going to go live every other Wednesday, and DOT compliance is the new addition to the Auto Transport Intel show lineup. And, do me a favor here. Let's do this. Say hello in the live chat. Please do join me in the live chat. Please do say hello. We want to, we're growing the community on this, and it is a new show. Nobody in the live chat. Wow, you never see that. Hey, I'll do this. How about this? Do me a favor. Okay, so you're looking at YouTube, and you're seeing this on your screen right here. You can see the share button. Do me a favor. Hit that like button, too. Appreciate it. Whether you're live or watching on demand, and you can join the live chat or comment below. But also, hit that share button and share this link. You hit share, then you hit copy, and you can grab that YouTube link, and you can text it, you can email it, share it on Facebook, LinkedIn, or any other social media. Let people know, listen, you got a DOT compliance question? There's a show. It's a live show. It's DOT compliance on Auto Transport Intel, and the goal of the show is to help answer those questions. Now, also, what I'm going to be doing here in a second is I'm going to go and add Brian to the show. But Oh, look at that. Ty is in here. Ty, just comply already. That's right. Ty says go ahead and comply. Ty says you should comply. All right, let's go to Brian Riker. That's enough out of me. Brian, can you see me and hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Can you see me, Jay?
Yeah, we're good. So, all right. So this is DOT compliance. We need to jump right in. I'll tell you what. I'm gonna roll a quick video. Before I do, do we have Wednesday wisdom?
Yes, we do. Wednesday wisdom this week is actually very boring, but because it's winter time and nobody really thinks about this, the chain laws are back in effect across a great part of the country, especially Colorado. You don't want to be caught without tire chains. The laws vary from state to state on when you need to carry them, what you need to carry, and they do apply to everyone from the one-ton pickup truck right through to the tractor trailer. Some states require you to have them for just drive axle. Some require you to have them for your trailer axle as well. Check your chain laws when you're going in and out of a state to make sure you have them with you. I know we don't like to carry them on the truck because they add a lot of extra weight to your truck. You don't want to drag around another 100 pounds if you don't have to, but you need to have them to be compliant. Very boring Wednesday wisdom, but you can save yourself a couple $100 fine or getting put out of service for not having tire chains with you.
But that, well, as boring as that may be, but you got my attention when you said I could get a fine. Let's say you're like me, okay, where I'm not out on the road, so I don't know. What can somebody do to find out more about chain laws, where they're traveling, what's going to apply to them? Where can people go?
Most states have the chain law posted on their DOT website. Colorado puts it up on the overhead billboard to remind you the chain laws are in effect. And also, our good friends over at OOIDA in their November issue of Landline Magazine every year post the most current chain laws that are in effect. They have a link to that on their website as well, landline.media.
Check this out. I just found a link, chain laws by state. I'm going to put this in the live chat, chain laws by state. And this is a nhhservices.com link.
Okay.
Interesting. That is very interesting. And yeah, it goes Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Alabama, right? Well, no, I mean, I guess at certain times of the year, almost everybody gets hit with the need, right? Even Louisiana, right?
Oh, yeah. You get ice in almost the entire country.
Okay. All right, cool. That is good Wednesday wisdom. That is exactly what we're talking about too. And I know that this segment was your idea, right? Wednesday wisdom. And that is a good Wednesday wisdom topic. So thank you so much. That was a good one.
You're welcome, Jay.
Cool. All right. So now, all right, we're 5 minutes into the show. So good. We're ahead on time. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to share my screen. I'm going to roll a video. I'm going to move those words out of the way. Now watch this. Okay, I don't know if you can see this video. I hope you can.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Problem is what? I say. What's the problem? Why did somebody send me this video?
I see a couple problems. Most likely, they're probably complaining about the weight that's on that load. I see a problem with the way the Jeep is loaded on the top back with soft top facing backwards. That's a damage claim waiting to happen. So I can see a couple issues with that load. Overall, it looks like a very typical load you're going to see going down the road every day.
And so, and there you go. And there begins the debate. Because, right, I'm sure, do you think the driver thinks he's got a problem?
Driver probably is perfectly happy with what he has there. And to tell whether he has a problem or not, we need a little bit more information. Is this driver trying to run under CDL, therefore keep the combination at 26,000 pounds or less? Or does he have a CDL? Does he have that truck and trailer registered and rated for what it actually is capable of? Because when you look at that truck, it looks like your typical 45 or 5,500 cab chassis. So we might have anywhere from a 7 to 10,000 pound drive axle on it. And that trailer right there, whether it's a Texas Pride or the Kaufman Mini 5, you can have up to 21,000 pounds of axle under that, believe it or not. They could be 7 or 8,000 pound Dexter axles under there. Most likely they're not, because a lot of guys get this rig to stay under CDL. So what we've got to look at is, how's he licensed? How's his truck registered? What are the tires and the axles actually rated for? And then come up with what that load weighs, because the static weight of that trailer is probably 7 or 8,000 pounds. His truck probably weighs 8 to 9,000 pounds. And we have maybe 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 16,000 pounds of car on there. So 15, 20, we're right at or just over CDL. So the legality of this will depend on how he's registered, how he's rated. He's definitely asking a lot out of that truck, no doubt about it, and asking a lot out of those brakes. I would surely hope that his brakes are well maintained, his truck is well maintained, and he knows how to drive. I'll give him credit. He's out in the middle. He's not tailgating anybody, but it's still a scary proposition when you have an inexperienced driver in a rig like that pushing it to its limits.
Wow. I mean, that is one heck of a synopsis. So I want to do this is that, okay, like Tom is asking me. So, hey, Jay is loading a 4 to 5 vehicles on electric brake trailer and pulling it with a dually. Is that compliant? I see it all the time. Wonder why this blatantly unsafe and illegal behavior isn't at the top of the DOT FMCSA compliance list to stop. I'm going to go to the next one. So, like, I think Tom was sharing this. And this comes from, I think this was on Already Logistics. There's a 5 car. I can't be sure where it came from. Carrier recognition. Right, so this is carrier recognition. And I think Tom is thinking that, yeah, carrier recognition with a questionable load, you know, so to speak. And here we go. How nice of Cox Ready to recognize their top performing carrier for August, an overloaded 5 car electric brake trailer with a dually pickup. It's very interesting to point out. I mean, it really is. What's your take? What do you think of that point of view?
My take is, I can't give a definitive opinion till I know exactly how that truck is registered, what the driver's qualifications are. He could, in fact, be overloaded. There's a high probability he's not, but he could be. Just because it looks questionable doesn't mean that it isn't illegal. Also, just because you can legally do it doesn't necessarily mean that it's smart and safe to do it either. Being compliant with the law does not always equate to being safe. That is a fundamental core to what I teach for above and beyond compliance. I hate playing in the gray area of, this is minimally compliant, you're good enough.
Well, then I'm going to, all right, so let's bring up your slides. So you've got some slides here. Our pickup truck's legal, and we'll try to move quickly. But help me out. So what's the method in this presentation?
All right, I'll just tell you when to advance the slide. This right here, this is your typical under CDL wedge setup. A lot of our audience have started with this. A lot of our guys run with this setup. My business partner started with almost that exact same setup there and built a nice company out of it. It's a great low-cost way to start in this business as long as you're aware of your limitations and you don't book too big of a load. You load the vehicles properly for weight distribution and you drive safely. So go ahead and advance one more. So in typical ratings, these are not exact. These are based on an average of what we're going to find on this equipment. Those trailer axles are typically got a rating of about 12,000 pounds because guys derate them so that they can stay on under CDL. Your drive axle on that 350, 450, 550 truck is somewhere between 6, 7, up to 10,000. So I picked the middle of the road, 7,000. Steer axle is about a 6,000 pound weight rating. So together we got a gross combined weight of 25,230 in this example. Well, just under CDL, enough room to handle three vehicles reasonably. So go ahead and advance.
Okay.
So now we're going to talk about the tear weight. Then what's that pickup truck weigh empty? Then we're going to look at what the typical trailer weighs in, about 6,000 pounds for the trailer. That pickup truck is somewhere 8,500 pounds. So you got about 14,000 pounds of vehicle on there. We got a 6,000 pound pickup truck, a minivan at maybe 38,4, and the little car. So now what do we have when we put that all together? Go ahead to the next one. So we've got about 28.5 between the truck and trailer. So while that looks legal, it looks healthy. That particular example, if my numbers are accurate, he's just over that CDL limit. So he could be looking at a operating out of class citation. He could be overloading what that truck and trailer is rated for. Now, that same exact trailer does come in a 14,000 pound rating. And so when you hook that up with a 550, you get a high enough weight rating to handle that load without a problem. This is why we can't just look at it and judge a book by its cover, because we don't know how that driver is licensed. We don't know how that vehicle is registered. I mean, I could draw some clues because I don't see a IFTA decal on there, which tells me he's probably under CDL, because if you're going to be over CDL, you're going to have fuel tax decals. But again, I can't just assume that is illegal. And this is why they get pulled into the weigh station all the time, because the motor carrier officer is going to do that same math I just did in my head in about 3 seconds when he sees you rolling up on down the highway and he decides to light you up and pull you over for an inspection and escort you to a scale, because he doesn't know whether that truck is rated, whether your tires are rated, whether your driver's licensed for the weight you're hauling or not. So he's going to pull you over to check in the interest of safety. So now we can continue on, because, I mean, look at this. What about this? It's a real truck, so it must be legal. And I can vouch for the numbers on this one, because that was my personal rig for several years. So go ahead and advance. I mean, that looks like a great truck. Nice single axle Mack, a Miller T7 trailer. Well, we're looking at 66,000 pounds gross weight between the truck, the trailer, and I could actually be a little bit more, but most states only give you 20,000 pounds on a single drive axle. That rear axle in that truck is actually rated for 23,000, and this particular photo was taken at Mannheim, New York, Newburgh Auto Auction, where New York allows you 22.4. So I could actually be a little bit heavier on this truck, but go ahead and let's go over what my tear weights are on this truck. We're looking at that Mack tractor. We're looking at that Miller T7 short neck trailer. You can advance the one more slide, please, sir. And so we have the Mack tractor weighs in 14,000 pounds. That trailer's a heavy sucker, 23.5. And the load in this case is approximately 26,000 pounds. I had a scale ticket for this picture somewhere, and I couldn't find it when I was putting this slide deck together. So now, all together, we add that all up, and what do I come out at? I come out at, advance to the next one, because I have horrible, real last-minute math.
Yeah.
I come out at 62,000.
Yeah.
So I'm under what my gross weight rating is, but now there's a special surprise here. I ran New York State all the time. I didn't like paying heavy vehicle use tax. I didn't like paying a higher proportion registration plate. So if you advance to the next slide, the big surprise is my truck was only registered at 54,000 pounds to avoid the heavy highway use tax. So I may be legal in the weight ratings, but I am not legal on the weight with that load because I was over what my registered weight was. And that exposes the truck to a citation. So again, you can't judge a book by a cover, but I never got weighed in 15 years of running single axle high mount seven car haulers. I was weighed once. They just look at it and they assume the truck can handle the weight and they assume that you're perfectly safe and legal. So what I'm saying is, I think Tom's a reasonable man, but don't judge a book by a cover. Don't make assumptions. And so, sure, we have an issue with pickup trucks and wedges flipping over and having accidents. I think that's more driver inexperience than the equipment they're using. We have an issue with people not properly maintaining their equipment, but that tractor trailer could be improperly maintained just as easily as the pickup truck and wedge. They had brake check a couple of weeks ago. 20% of the vehicles they inspected were put out of service for defective brakes. To be put out of service for defective brakes, you have to have at least two or 20% of your brakes, depending on how many number of axles you have, but you got to have at least two of them that are not functioning or severely out of adjustment to be put out of service. So at this time, one in five trucks running down the highway next to us does not have properly functioning, properly adjusted brakes. And that goes from big tractor, full-size tractor trailers, right down to the pickup trucks. It isn't exclusive to the folks that want to run the hotshot type rig, but they definitely have a heavier burden than those running a tractor trailer because it's a little more forgiving on my truck there if my brakes are out of adjustment than it is on the pickup truck and trailer when their brakes are out of adjustment. And honestly, I see where Tom's coming from on the electric brake part. Electric brakes scare me personally, and I've had a CDL 29 years now this October, and I've driven all of this equipment, I've towed this equipment, I've done horse trailers, RV trailers, as a tow operator, as a drive-away guy. I don't like electric brakes, but they're not illegal. They meet federal motor vehicle safety standards. When they're manufactured, they meet the performance standards. The manufacturer can't just slap a set of axles under a trailer and say it's good for 21,000 pounds. There are test criteria they must test for. They must certify that this meets it. It gets independently checked. So as much as we don't like them, they are legal. And in the opinion of federal highway, they are safe. I say it comes down to operator training and operator experience to determine whether they really are safe or not.
Yeah, because you hear what Tom is saying. He's not alone. Lots of people are saying what he's saying. Let's go to, all right, so I think we got a few more slides here.
Yes, we do.
I think we covered this one. Okay. No way, pun intended.
This one's my favorite set in the slide deck, okay, because when we look at that, that's a GN600 six-car trailer being pulled by a Ram 5500. You're going to say, with six vehicles on there? Absolutely not. It can't be legal. But go ahead and let's see what the numbers turn out to be. I pulled these numbers right straight from, the pickup truck I pulled from what I know what the chassis weighs, but I pulled the trailer number from the website. So we've got trailer axles, surprise, hydraulic brake, dual rear wheel axles. We have 30,000 pounds of axle under that trailer. They give the trailer a 24,500 pound GVW rating total, but really you got 30,000 pounds of axle under that. You got two 15,000 pound axles. The drive axle on that cab chassis is a 10,000 pound and change axle, steer axle 7,000 pounds. So we got a gross combined weight rating count based just on the axle count, which is the number it's going to come down to determine whether you can stop, and of 47,200 pounds. So the scale master is going to love this when he looks at the numbers. So now what is the load weight? Go ahead and bounce on to the next slide. But right there, this rig has a lot more capacity than your typical wedge does. So we got that Ram 55 custom sleeper chassis. My best guesstimate is it weighs somewhere in the 9,500 pound range. That trailer's about 9,000 pounds. I'm figuring that load is somewhere in the 20. I went a little high at 21.5 for the weight because you got some bigger sedans in there. So what do we have for a total on that? We have a actual weight of 39.7 or 7,500 pounds below what the manufacturer's declared gross weight ratings are. So if he's properly registered and that load is properly distributed so he doesn't put more than 10,000 pounds on his drive axle on that power unit, he is completely legal to go down the road with that. Yet you would look at that picture and say, no way in heck is he allowed to be on the highway with this rig. Now, is it advisable? Again, like I say, just because you can do it legally doesn't mean you should. And so if we play with the weight distribution on that trailer, I guarantee you I can overload his rear axle easy. You got to be very careful how you load the car's nose on, back on to get the weight around. But the manufacturer on this particular trailer says you get about 30% of the weight transferred to the tongue, which is a proper weight distribution on the trailer anyhow. So if we have 30,000 pounds of trailer, we have about 9,000 pounds going up on his 10,000 pound drive axle. If we're going to find anything illegal about this at all, we're going to find his drive axle is overloaded. But maybe not, because that's an extra long wheelbase. That's probably an 84, if not 120 inch cabbed axle, meaning it's a really long truck. And so that works the lever, and he can transfer some weight up to his steer axle with that if the fifth wheel is mounted in the right place and he has enough turning radius, blah, blah, blah. So again, this one's right on the border of whether the drive axle is legal on that power unit. But this truck most likely would pass scrutiny on a scale house. So I go back to, how can we say just wholesale that the pickup truck and the 5 and 6 car trailers are illegal and don't belong in this industry and don't belong on the road? I say it goes back to the company that's operating them and their dedication to safety, the qualifications of their driver, and the training that their driver receives. And this is why I support the effort to require, and it's going to upset a lot of people, but I support the effort to require minimum driver training standards that were supposed to go into effect January of this year. They've now put off another 2 years that'll require CDL drivers to have the equivalent of at least the 160-hour class. But I really believe that we should apply CDL standards to anybody that wants to operate a commercial vehicle. There are already Class C CDL licenses for folks that haul passengers or hazardous materials. Why shouldn't there be a CDL Class C license for the guys that want to avoid the IFTA and the abortion plate, but still have some mandatory driver training to be safe? So I say let's call for better driver training standards more than regulations on the equipment. And that's what I have to say on this. So I'm open for questions and answers now.
Love it. Okay, I think that's the last slide. That was an amazing presentation, Brian. I mean, Thank you. Great slides, great information, different scenarios, and overall, man, the detail and the level of knowledge, not lost on the live chat. Several people in the live chat. Danny B says, hello, everyone. Brian is such a throw of knowledge, treasure trove of knowledge, maybe. Love the guy. Chupacabra says hello. Larry Richter is here. Andrew Serica is here. So people are loving the information, Brian. That's really cool. And thank you for that. Thanks for putting that together. Let's see. I shared the link to your website. So, Brian, what? Let's talk about this for a couple minutes, and then we're going to go to the James Lamb information. So, Brian, what is your background? What do you do?
What do I do? Depends upon the day of the week and what hat I'm wearing. I am a safety and compliance consultant. I own a company called Fleet Compliance Solutions. I specialize in the non-traditional fleets, the towers, the landscapers, the auto transporters, the hotshotters, and I am one of you. Like I said, I've had a CDL for 29 years. I don't just sit behind a desk. I'm out on the road 2 or 3 days a week. I move tow trucks and car haulers for worldwide equipment sales. I provide training and support in the towing industry. And I owned an auto transport company. I operated car haul equipment for probably 15, 16 of the 29 years I've had a commercial driver's license. And I've been around the auto industry my entire life. I've done used car sales. I do tow truck and car hauler sales. I started when I was a 14-year-old kid washing cars at a local Chevy dealer. So I've been around this industry my entire life. I was an operations manager at a predecessor to what is now Insurance Auto Auctions. So I've run the auction side of the business as well. That is what I do. I help small fleets get their operating authority, pass the audit, answer your questions when something goes wrong. I'm there with a subscription plan 24/7 in case you have that accident at 1 o'clock in the morning and you don't know what to do. You give me a call and I walk you through it. And I try to get out of, stay away from the business consulting side. I leave that to the experts like Ty, the insurance I leave up to Lionel, but I'll help you get what you need, get right with your insurance companies. But really, I'm here to teach you how to run a compliant business and show you what is beyond compliance so that you actually are safe without overburdening yourself with some of this nonsense and without spending a small fortune. I teach you how to do stuff you can do for yourself for free. It's counterintuitive because I make my money off of this, but I want you to learn how to run your business and learn what you can do by yourself. That way, eventually, you're not as dependent on hired help, if you will.
Right on. All right, well, I shared your link. I said, contact Brian if you're in a jam. Because we have seen, we've seen situations where, if you're in a situation and you're facing, this is going to put you in some legal hot water, maybe insurance trouble, tickets, fines, citations, and you don't know what to do, contact Brian. Get it handled, right?
Yes.
Don't let a problem get bigger faster.
Let me put a disclaimer out here. I may sound like an attorney sometimes, but I am not an attorney. I am a consultant. I am properly insured. I have errors and omissions insurance in case I screw up, but I will direct you to an attorney if you need one. I cannot go to court on your behalf. I do not do tax filings. Don't ask me to come file your IFTA or get your apportioned registration plate. There's other experts that are much better at that than I am, but I can give you the overall overarching guidance you need to run a compliant motor carrier company, help you when you're ready to hire on drivers, help you when you're ready to lease on owner operators, even review some stuff that you might be getting into with a broker agreement or something like that. So that's what I do.
Cool. All right. Awesome. I'm going to share my screen. We're going to do a couple more things. We're going to wrap up the show soon, guys. 30 minutes goes fast. Yes, this is the Auto Transport Intel website. Yes, Jay, we know about your YouTube channel. And the reason I brought this up, though, okay, remember we made this video
when you hear the
explained dispatching versus brokering. I shouldn't have clicked on it, but here it is, explained dispatching versus brokering. You were on the show and we made this video and I love this. I think it's really helpful. Well, James Lamb, he was on my show. We did a dispatcher versus broker show. He posted on LinkedIn. And by the way, just to say this, I think James and I have had very civil, important discourse. And I want to keep it that way. The reason I'm sharing this article is this week's Spotlight in Transportation Dispatch Services. James mentions Auto Transport Intel, 3-part interview. And that's awesome. Thank you, James. I appreciate that. But down in the comments, and I asked him what he thought of that explained video, and this guy says, I think he's talking about you. He says, that guy is trying to justify illegal freight brokering.
Yes. And not to come off sounding like Mr. Lamb, and I respect his opinion and his position, and I respect that he's fighting for small business trucking companies.
Right.
There's not enough people out there to fight for small business trucking companies. But it's not my intent. Go ahead, Jay.
And to be clear, James Lamb didn't say that. I don't know the guy that did.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
James has promoted similar thought processes. And James is very vocal against dispatching services. We know that. He's filed some comments. We received a letter back from former Deputy Administrator Mullins at FMCSA on this subject. I've sent my own letter for clarification, and I participated in the broker listening session FMCSA had last Wednesday to see where we're going with this, because TIA, which is the trade association for the brokers, submitted a petition trying to take away some of the motor carriers' rights, which I don't agree with, but also asking for a clear definition of what a dispatch service is and if a dispatcher can work for more than one motor carrier at a time. My contention, which I've vetted through several transportation attorneys that are experts, my position is, yes, you can be a bona fide agent of more than one motor carrier at a time if and only if you are acting only on behalf of one of your clients at a time. You cannot go out and get a whole bunch of work and then decide which trucking company you want to dish it out to. That is, in fact, a broker. But there's nothing that says you can't, on behalf of Jay's Hauling, call up Joe's dealership and ask him if he has any loads that need to be moved. Or you can't log in using Jay's Hauling's credentials and log into the Ready Load Board or Cars Arrive or Central Dispatch or one of them and find work for him, book work for him, enter into agreements on his behalf. What you cannot do is, well, you're in there using Jay's Auto Haulings, login, find loads and earmark them for another carrier you know that doesn't have access to Central Dispatch, and then try to get those loads to that carrier. You have to be working on behalf of one motor carrier at a time, but nothing says you can't work for more than one motor carrier. Nothing says you have to be a employee. It says you got to be a regular part of their normal course of operations to be a bona fide agent, but that does not mean you must be an employee. They have clarified you can be a contractor. In the petition that TIA, which is the Broker Association, filed on this, they even agree with the guidance that FMCSA does have out, the very limited guidance, that you do not have to be an employee of the motor carrier to be a bona fide agent. And they even, in their own petition on page 6 of the 8 pages, they agree that it is possible when acting on behalf of one motor carrier at a time that a dispatcher could work for multiple companies. Where we have a problem in this industry are the dispatchers that are acting like brokers, gathering up their own customers, misrepresenting themselves as a transportation company, as Billy Bob's Auto Transport, when really they are somebody sitting in front of a computer taking notes and then finding other trucking companies. That is, at essence, a broker or a freight forwarder, one or the other. And that requires authority. There's very specific rules on how a broker can advertise. A broker can never advertise themselves as a trucking company. Even when you have these trucking companies that also have brokerage houses, such as, we'll go into freight world, we'll pick on Schneider. They have a broker arm, or J.B. Hunt, they have a broker arm. They have to be crystal clear to who they're moving the load for, that it is not a J.B. Hunt truck or a Schneider truck moving that load, that they're brokering it out. The same thing applies in car haul world. We cannot advertise ourselves as an auto transport company if we don't have motor carriers that are actually leased on to us or own and operate our own trucks with our own drivers. We have to advertise ourselves as a brokerage firm. The same rules would apply to a dispatch service. They can't advertise themselves as a trucking company. They can advertise themselves as a representative of Brian's Auto Transport, but they can't go out and say that we're Dispatch Auto Transport when they don't own a single truck or even have operating authority to run a truck. Does that make sense to you?
Well, it makes sense to me. I feel like no matter how much sense you make, there's going to be this lack of some people to hear it. And I've gone as far and said I don't think the FMCSA even knows what a dispatcher is.
They don't, and that's part of what TIA wants clarification on. Is let's define what a dispatch service is, and then determine if it is subject to any bond or other regulation or if they are in fact a broker service. Years ago, brokers were a commissioned sales arm of the trucking company, not this completely independent business that finds work from all sorts of major shippers, consolidates it, has hundreds or thousands of trucking companies working with them. It used to be just like a real estate agent. When you sell your house, you hire somebody to represent you. You used to hire a broker back before deregulation days. You used to hire a broker to find work for your trucking company. That's what they were there for. That's why we have transparency and we're allowed to see what they charge to make sure that they were only keeping the percentage of commission you agreed on. It doesn't work that way anymore.
Right. And I'll tell you, and it seems to me, rather than really get into broker transparency, let's talk about dispatchers and all this. I mean, that's what it seems like to me. And what I'm really worried about, if they do get a definition with the FMCSA, I don't think they're going to get the definition right.
No, they probably will not. Now, I filed comments on, or I am planning on filing comments on this petition. You're allowed to make public comments. And so if you have your own opinion, either side of the argument you're on, we need comments on both sides. If you have your own opinion on what is a dispatch service and how legal are they, go to regulations.gov. You will search FMCSA. You'll find the petition filed by TIA and OOIDA and James Land at SBTC. You'll find their petitions. There's a process for filing comments on these petitions. This way FMCSA can get the industry of input they need. This is why they had the listening session last week so we could talk about it. They want comments from those that work in the industry. They want dispatchers.
Yes, they need dispatchers.
They need dispatchers to comment, and they need truckers and motor carriers to comment. At this listening session, it was very one-sided. It was brokers speaking, not the small truckers.
I believe that. And I mean, unfortunately, I've said I believe several times. Therefore, I'm sure my opinions can be discounted. But I do encourage it. When I read that guy is encouraging illegal freight brokering, period, where's the rest of the information? If you're going to say it's not, right? Let's get some, so I said, can we get some specifics?
I would love to invite him on to a one-on-one roundtable so we can discuss the issues, because I want to know what he believes is illegal. Let me present a counterpoint to it. But here, I'll throw a whole nother bombshell out for you. And this is my personal opinion based in my understanding of regulations and congressional intent. We used to regulate for rates and service. In 1980, they decided we did not need to do that anymore, and they worked on eliminating the Interstate Commerce Commission, deregulating trucking, as we call it. They created this agency in 2000 called the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. Their sole purpose is to regulate safety aspects for the motor carrier industry. They are not there to regulate rates and service. They're not there to regulate areas that we can operate in anymore. They're there for safety. So I want to know, what part of safety does regulating how much a broker can earn, or what part of safety does requiring a bond to guarantee the trucking company is going to get paid from unscrupulous brokers, what part of safety does that apply to? No other industry out there, with a few exceptions, are you guaranteed that you're going to get paid if the person you're doing the work for goes belly up. And even here, you don't. You get pennies on the dollar. But the theory is you're going to get paid. So why?
The analogy is, you have a heart attack, you dial 911, paramedics show up. While they're putting you on the gurney, he starts asking you how your credit cards are going.
Mm-hmm. and if you can't pay it, oh well, you're gone. So
are you current on your auto loan? What's going on with your outstanding college debt?
my whole take is that
that's great.
Only motor carriers should be regulated by Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. Congressional intent was for safety, not economic impact, economic regulation anymore. So if we're going to regulate brokers and dispatch services, perhaps the Safety Administration, FMCSA, is not the agency to do it. Perhaps they need to be fully incorporated under UCC, the Commerce Code or Commerce Clause, and regulated like a banking or a securities interest with fiduciary responsibility and stuff like that. But in either case, I don't think that dispatching services and brokerages really need to be regulated anymore. It should become a buyer's market where we, the truck owner, and I say this as a former fleet owner and as a former one truck owner operator, we, the truck owner, should be the ones that are taking it or leaving it and telling the broker, no, we're not going to participate on those terms in your agreement. You're going to sign our carrier agreement and not the other way around. That's the way it used to be. Mm. The motor carriers had a tariff book and they had a rate and they had a rule book that when you signed your bill of lading, it referenced back to that several hundred page document, and that set the rules for the engagement. The motor carrier made the rules, not the broker. And it's time that we as motor carriers stand up and make that happen again. Mm. And then this is a moot issue because it doesn't matter whether a broker is a dispatcher or a dispatcher is a broker, because the ball's back in our court. Stop rolling over and playing dead. How about that?
Mm, man, great final statement. So I'll tell you what, let's end right there. We are at 40 minutes. Man, 30 is just so short. We did it in 40, though. Brian, we covered a lot of information. This was an amazing show today. We'll be back in 2 weeks. So that is November 18th on a Wednesday at noon Central Time. Brian, thanks for everything you do. Thanks for taking the time. And I'm looking forward to the next one.
Thank you, Jay. Same here. You have a great day. Thank you, everybody.
Take care, everybody. And I'm going to let Brian go, and I'm going to go back to the home screen. Guys, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on DOT Compliance. I'm really glad that this show has been added to the Auto Transport Intel stable of shows. Auto Transport Intel is the car shipping business channel. And if you've got a question and you need help, please do. Comment below. If you missed the live show, share it, comment, like, subscribe. Tell your friends, stay safe, and we'll see you soon. Peace out.